see him. And then I'm going to stop the recording. Where is it? Stop. All right, we are.
All right, so I will call the meeting to order. This is a meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District, Wednesday, August 12th. We're starting at 7:06 p.m. I will call the meeting to order. I am here, President Stein, Vice President Padian.
Here.
Director Domer.
Here.
Director Kosel. I see her, but I didn't hear anything. I think that was that a here for Janice? Director Nagel.
Here.
Okay. All right, so the first item on the agenda is oral communications, which is a place on the agenda reserved for comments by board members and the public for items that are not otherwise on the agenda. So I will start with the board members, and to move briefly, I'll go in alphabetical order to keep it simple. So I will start with Don. Do you have any comments?
No.
Janice. Can't, I see you look like you're saying something, but can't hear you.
No, you no audio.
No audio. She's not muted either.
Our technology is not our friend tonight.
I know.
It might be better for Janice to log off and go back in. I don't know if anyone else has a better suggestion.
We can't hear you, Janice.
And it's showing, I had this happen the other day where it just doesn't sort of show up at all, that like the icons are missing and the person had to just leave and then come back.
Okay.
I don't know what she's trying to tell us.
It looked like frustration, but I can't read the sign.
It's hard.
Oh.
I don't know what to do except suggest, Janice, that maybe you, leave and come back. So let's just wait for her out of courtesy so she hears everybody else's comments.
Yeah, she asked if there was something with her audio that she could do. So hopefully logging back on will take care of it.
Sometimes it does, yeah.
She's back.
Looks, are you connected to audio now, Janice? It said you were, but we can't hear you.
I don't know what's wrong. She's listed.
I know. I saw the connecting to audio. Janice?
Is she phoning or using a laptop?
I don't think any of us knows because we can't hear her, but you might want to consider looking at the agenda and calling in with your phone. That's what other folks have done who've had trouble connecting. So Mary, you don't see an option to unmute her?
Yeah, she's unmuted from what my screen shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because if I'm not the host, I can't see those options except for myself.
Yeah, that's why I'm not sure why the audio is not working.
So, and we do have 13 members of the public on the call, in addition to those of us. And we're just waiting. See if we can get Janice looped in here. Happen to know if Janice can hear us, because if so, we could move through our comments and she could hear what's being said, and then we could come back to her to make her own comment.
You could also get on a video or a conference call with Mary, and Mary could repeat her questions or thoughts. I mean, if worse comes to worse.
Okay. Yeah, we did that once with Don, actually, while we were waiting to get him connected, and it worked fine. I don't know if you have her phone number, though, Mary.
I don't know that I have her phone number. I just sent her an email. She's been responding to emails quickly.
If we can confirm that she can hear, then I will move on.
Is she locked up?
Janice is now on the list of attendees.
Oh, that must be the phone call.
Okay, so you could promote her to the panel then.
Oh, to panelists. Okay. So I promoted.
Mary.
She's showing up. Okay. So I think if I unmute this other one.
Okay. Janice, could you, are you able to hear us, and can you give it a try to say something?
I think she's still muted.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm looking unmuted. She's not unmuted.
Whatever she just phoned in on is muted.
I think you can press star 9 to unmute on a phone, if it's not.
Star 9?
I think so.
Could she hear us? Star 9, Janice.
Technology.
I know.
Good tip, Rachel.
Well, if I knew she could hear us, we could move ahead. I don't know if you have the ability to text message her and message. I'm just trying to be as totally transparent as possible to include her in everything.
Looks like these glitches can happen to anyone.
Anyone. And we try to give everybody the same break. Now I see her showing up as muted.
On her
on the phone thing, yes, that's the way it's been.
Yeah, the phone one, I keep clicking unmute and it won't allow me to do that.
Does anyone object if I go ahead and ask Larry and Kevin if they have any comments, or do you guys want to wait for Janice? Let me just leave it that, Larry, when you're ready, if you want to go ahead.
I don't have any comments at this time.
Okay, how about you, Kevin?
think of any at present, Julie.
All right, mine are just mostly procedural. And before we move to public comment, which I'm sure Janice would want to hear if there is any, but I do want to say that we ended up with an unexpectedly long agenda tonight. And we don't know how long the items. Is that?
I think. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Now we're getting the echo. Good.
Okay, I'm going to do it on my phone and leave this meeting and try to stay on the phone. Okay. Now, can you still hear me?
Yes.
All right. I will make my public comment, if I may, or am I out of order at this point?
No, you're fine, actually. We went to Larry and Kevin, and they didn't have any comment, and so go right ahead.
Okay, I wanted to note that the La Mirinda CERT is having another sale distribution program, and you can order on the La Mirinda CERT website anytime before September 3rd for delivery at the El Cerrito Corporate Yard on September 11th. And I hope we can put that information on our website.
Excellent, thank you. And so my comments are really just procedural. We had an unexpectedly full agenda tonight, and it's hard to predict how long the items will take. So unless someone has a serious objection, I wanted to go in order because we have Brent Ives and we have our attorney, Rachel Hundley, on the line. So their items are first after the consent calendar. Then out of courtesy to Chief Pagoni, I wanted to take the reports. So I was gonna skip from 4.6 then to the President, GM, and Fire Chief report, and then go back to the rest of the items that we need to discuss and potentially take action. And we also, I think it would help people if we built in a break. These calls have a long time to kind of sit in one place. So I'd also like to put a 5-minute break in before the President, GM, and Fire Chief reports. And then finally, we do have a board policy that allows us to limit the discussion of any item to 20 minutes. And we've certainly tried to do that in the past. But the discussions have been vigorous and we have been reticent to cut people off. But let us give that a try and be courteous and try to move the meeting forward so that we don't have to extend past 10. Of course, we could if the board votes to. And then finally, if we don't make it through the agenda, so please remember that we follow the Sturgis Code. And if we would like to take action to defer any items, that would be a motion to postpone. And if we want to end the meeting before getting through the agenda, we will need a motion to adjourn so that we can pick up the agenda for any items that we haven't postponed. We can pick up the agenda at another time. And so with that, I will go to comments from the public. We have 14 attendees on the line. Mary is hosting tonight instead of turning over to me, so we'll see how that goes. So Mary will watch for hands raised and call on members of the public.
All right, I have Paul Moss. Paul? Paul, are you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
All right.
Is that all right?
Yes, can hear you.
Okay, should I go ahead?
Yes.
Yeah, my name is obviously Paul Moss. I live on Lake Drive and I'm a member of the KFPD Emergency Preparedness Committee. And I'd like to alert the board to an issue with the email that was sent out just yesterday by the KPD about the virtual emergency evacuation drill scheduled for a week from Saturday. I think it's the 22nd. I just think it's important that our police and fire departments let all, I want to emphasize that word, all Kensington residents know that the drill messages they will receive on their landlines and cell phones that morning from the CWS will show a caller ID of either 10 zeros on their landline or essentially an unrecognizable five-digit number on their cell phones. Now, I know the CWS people are working to change this. Kevin mentioned it recently. And trying to change it to a more recognizable caller ID format that will be clear what it is. But it's not known whether this will be done before the drill on the 22nd. I talked to Lorena at the CWS yesterday, and she just wasn't sure. So as mentioned in an email from Vice President Padian, but just to members of this board and the EPC, failure to recognize the current CWS caller IDs I've described was a major concern and or complaint in the post-drill survey from many Orinda residents who participated in their recent evac drill. Some residents simply ignored these call-outs because they thought it was a scam or junk call based on the confusing caller IDs. This issue has been brought up before. I remember that Chief Pagoni included in a piece he published in the Outlook some time ago. I've mentioned it at a recent EPC meeting. I had a letter to the editor in the Outlook. The problem is I doubt many residents really ever read this, or if they did, will remember this caller ID information because it has not been communicated to the public as a whole in a clear message. And so it occurred to me this drill is a perfect opportunity to do just that. And after all, isn't testing the CWS system and getting the alert in a recognizable format to residents the goal of this drill, not to mention during a real event. So I'm thinking that it would be helpful if a KFPD director, perhaps Director Padian or Director Nagel, since they head up the EPC, could ask the police department to please send out a second email to alert residents to these potentially rather confusing caller IDs from the CWS on the 22nd. More importantly, during a real event, maybe I'm thinking this information could possibly be included in a reminder about the drill that they might be planning on sending out next week. I could personally go attend essentially to this KPP CSD meeting tomorrow night and bring it up. But as directors, you guys have a lot more clout than in dealing with them that I don't. So that's my request.
Paul, I will be happy to bring that up at the police district meeting. I'm planning on attending.
Okay, that would be great, I think. I realize, by the way, it's not the most important part of that drill, but if you look at the survey results from the Orinda drill, it was mentioned over and over by recipients of it. Thank you.
I'd like to hear what the chief thinks of anything on that.
On the number, Kevin? Yeah, I seriously doubt they're going to have the number changed. In talking with Chief Capallo a couple days ago, I know that they are working on it just because, I mean, I guess the 10 zeros is, I'm not sure exactly what problem that is creating. But they are trying to find a way to give it a different constant ID since it's not really a true phone number, but they're trying to come up with something for it. So, I mean, at this point, as Paul indicated, while it is important that we get as many people to participate in this as possible, and we want to get that message out there to everybody, more of the issues is how well this coordination works between public safety, both fire and police, and working with the county, with the CWS, how well all of that interface works. And for those people that do get the message, how well the message works for them, are they getting into the fact of, the load and go, the knocking on your neighbor's doors, which are, we don't want them to load and go, but it for this drill, what we do want them to, kind of go through the motions, discuss with their family. We do want them to go to neighbors' houses and, knock on doors and let them know that there is a virtual drill going, just so that, it kind of becomes that muscle memory. Hopefully, this doesn't happen for real, but if it does, that'll be a step that they remember for it. But, you know, the drills, the couple drills they've done in Moraga Rinda, this one, there's a lot being learned. The feedback has been fantastic, which is obviously why we're doing the drills, not only for the notification of the public, but just to work the bugs out. Because, you know, up to this point of what Moraga Rinda's been doing and with what we've been doing with Kensington and El Cerrito, the biggest thing that the community warning system has been doing is pretty much a shelter in place for the refineries. You know, we are the first two agencies to sit there and start using CWS for evacuation. I mean, not that they didn't have that capability before, but there was nothing organized about it. It was just going to be kind of an all call, send it out if something happened that they needed to get the messages out. So looking forward to the information and the feedback we're going to get from this drill.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Moss, for your comment. And thank you, Chief Bagoni, for the follow-up there. Mary, I don't see, maybe you see, I don't see any other hands.
Nope, no more.
Or forever hold your peace on public comment. All right, we shall move on to the consent calendar. The consent items tonight are items 3.1 through 3.6, which are considered to be routine by the board. Any member of the public or the board can ask to have an item removed from the consent calendar for discussion and individual action. And the consent items tonight are approval of minutes from several meetings, acceptance of the incident activity report, approval of the monthly financial report, approval of the monthly transmittal, which was updated on the website. I would like to draw everyone's attention to that. It's different than what was in your packet. And authorize the interim general manager to pay recurring bills and provide monthly report to the board of directors. And adoption of resolution 2011, approving amendments to 1150 budget preparation and review. So I would like to ask, does any member of the board wish to remove an item from the consent calendar?
I'd like to remove 3.4 and 3.5.
Okay, so that's the transmittal and the authorization to pay recurring bills. Thanks, Janice. Anyone else? I would like to actually remove the minutes, 3.1. And any members of the public? I do not see any hands raised. So do I have a motion to approve consent items 3.2, 3.3, and 3.6?
I make a motion that we approve the consent items 3.1, 3.2, and 3.6.
Second.
3.1 was pulled, Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry, 3.2, 3.3, and 3.6.
Thanks, Larry.
Second.
All right, discussion among the board, discussion among the public. All in favor of Director Nagel's motion?
We have to do a roll call.
I know, sorry. I was ready to respond. Thank you, Larry. I am in favor, Vice President Padian.
Yes.
Director Domer?
Yes.
Director Kosol?
Yes.
Director Nagel?
Yes.
Thank you. Moving back to the items that were pulled, I just wanted to say the reason that I pulled the minutes was merely because I noticed some instances where names were misspelled. And so I was just hoping that the names were corrected. John Mercurio's name was misspelled in one instance. I have it there, but I think by looking through, you'll figure it out. Glenn Lazoff's name was misspelled, and there may have been one other, okay. But I didn't have any other reason to pull the minutes.
Okay.
Other
than that. We'll get that corrected.
Anyone else have a comment on the minutes? Comments from the public? So do I have a motion then to approve the minutes of the regular meetings, May 13, June 10, the revision, June 10 involves a revision of minutes that were already approved, July 8, and the special meeting of June 26, which is item 3.1 on the agenda.
I make the motion that we approve the minutes as corrected in item 3.1.
Second. Motion Nagel, second Domer.
Second, yeah.
Okay. There was no discussion before. So I vote in favor of Director Nagel's minutes. Vice President Padian?
Yes.
Motion. Sorry. Director Padian?
Yes.
Director Domer?
Yes.
Director Kosel?
Aye.
And Director Nagel?
Yes.
So the minutes are approved with the requested corrections of spelling. All right, let's move on to 3.4, the monthly transmittal. And Janice, why don't you go ahead and let us know what your concerns are?
My concern is that we were paying a penalty for paying a phone bill late, and I take it that that's one of the reasons why we're also being presented with 3.6. Is that correct?
So, 3.5.
3.5, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yes, we've had some challenges in getting the payments through the county. There's been quite a lag that's created that, so we want to avoid that. So if at all possible, that item would help us to get those paid before the meeting, probably right near the beginning of the month, or if the dates are not concurring with the first, we'll pay them to make sure that they're on time and we have more control over that. So yes, that is the reason for 3.5.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right. Did you have any other concerns?
No, I was just unhappy to see a 30-something dollar late fee on a phone bill.
All right, any other board member comments? The transmittal. I just wanted to say, in case anybody's looking at the one in your packet, the reimbursement to that's listed as being to me for $11.30, that was actually a sort of a misplaced item, Mary has corrected that because that was actually paid directly by the district, and I had provided the receipt because I picked up the packet. So the corrected version on the website just shows the actual $85 charge for the packets that I did pick up and pay with my own personal credit card. All right, since this, do I have a motion to approve the transmittal before I go for public comment?
It's 3.3 and 3.5 together.
You pulled 3.4 and 3.5, correct?
Yes, it's 3.4 and 3.5.
Are you saying we can't vote on 3.4 until you're happy with 3.5?
I'm happy with both. I just wanted an explanation.
Oh, well, we have to ask for other discussion. Now that you pulled them, we have to take them one at a time. So anyway, any comments from the public on the transmittal? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the monthly transmittal, item 3.4, as amended on the website?
I move we approve the monthly transmittal, item 3.4.
Do I have a second? Second?
Second.
I think Don was first, so we'll give Don a second.
The first second, huh?
Yeah. Okay, I'm in favor of the motion to approve the transmittal. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
And Larry?
Aye.
Transmittal is approved as posted on the website. Okay, so 3.5. Janice, did you have any other comments besides what you've already brought up?
Nope.
Any other board member comments on 3.5 to authorize the interim general manager to pay recurring bills and provide monthly report to the board of directors? All right then, do I have a motion to authorize such for item 3.5?
That moved.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
I think Larry got there first. So any comments from the public, which we're required to do for an action item, or board members? I don't see any. So I'm in favor of the motion, Kevin.
I'm in favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Aye.
All right, so we've made it through the consent calendar. And thank you, everyone. And so now we turn to the first of the administrative items, item 4.1, which is a status report on the permanent GM recruiting efforts. Mr. Brent Ives of BHI Consulting has joined us. He is running the recruitment process. And he, thank you, Brent, for coming tonight to give an update to the board. The action associated with this, should we so proceed, would be to accept Mr. Ives' report.
Hey.
The floor is yours.
Who's it?
He might be muted though.
Brent. He's not showing as muted.
We can't hear you, Brent.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Here we go.
That button, so sorry. I know you've got a written report, but there's been some updates since the written report, and I had met with the committee on Sunday, and there's been an update since then, which is good because when you have updates, generally it adds to the candidate pool. This is the last week of a 60-day posting. We had, during that time, 24 inquiries. People that were looking at the job, talking to me about the job, emailing me. Of those 24, 9 actually applied with their information. Of those 9, 6 are qualified. There were 7, 1 dropped out. We got 1 just yesterday. We got 2 over the weekend. So things are moving. This happens usually a lot. People wait and see and test the market, and then they jump in or not, depending on what they know. Of those 6 that meet the basic qualifications, I've talked to all of them about the specific particulars of this job. And there are some particulars. There's the part-time nature, and there's the fact that there's no staff, those kinds of things. I wanted to make sure they knew that so they knew what they were coming into. I've talked to all of them about that, made sure they understood that clearly before we move them to another position. As of Friday, when the posting closes, then I will go deeper into those 6. The other 3 are, I could go deeper, but quite frankly, their paperwork just doesn't match the qualifications that you're looking for. But the good news is 6 of them do. I'm reasonably optimistic about the 6. There's people there that are recent former city managers that retired that want to stay in the business but want to do it part-time. There are 3 of them that have well-documented EMS and FEMA certifications. There are, and unfortunately, they're not exactly the same. It's not the city manager with all those. It's usually someone that comes from that EMS world. And that's good. That gives the board options regarding what's going to be important. Some of them have good public governance related experience. There's one that's a general manager at another district right now. So I'm reasonably encouraged at this point. There were times when it got a little later into the process, I was a little concerned that we weren't going to get any more than we did, but we have gotten some, and I'm glad to report that. 2 are from out of the area. They would actually need to move. And just in an overview, that's where we sit right now. It could be in the next 2 days I get 4 more. It could be that others drop out. I don't think there are going to be any drops at this point because I've talked to them all. but we could get some new ones too. When the posting closes, I will begin doing a deeper dive on all those six. And then I will have I'll ask the committee to meet with me again, and we will collectively do that same thing. And what we will be doing is deciding how and how many and who, and with only six, we'll need to bring that to the full board and discuss all of those six with you, potentially, unless, you know, we find out that that's not, they don't qualify for some reason. During this time as well, we'll be doing a thorough internet background, public social media, kind of a background on these people. We're not gonna do a background check. We do that at the end with the finalists, but one that you actually pay for and you go into all the legal things. But we are going to look at their social media profile, what they've left on social media. That doesn't disqualify them. That's just something that we need to talk about and say, you know, if it's out there, we need to know it. And I'll be spending a lot of time with them on the phone as well. Again, all to move to the committee, to report to the committee, then all to move to the full board and begin weeding through those. I suspect that the full board will hear something back early in September, maybe even earlier than that. The committee will hear back from me in a week and a half or so when I've had time to go deeper, look at references, call references, things like that. So that's where we're at. I'm certainly open for questions. And again, I think it's, for me, from my standpoint, this is a very positive report.
Thank you very much, Brent. So let's go to the board members first. And just to keep it simple, I'm gonna start with Don. Do you have any questions, Don, or comments? We can come back to you. Did you guys hear me? Did
heard you?
Yeah. I don't know if Don heard me.
I'm okay. I'll wait to see what the next round shows.
Okay. Thank you, Don. Next in alphabetical order is Janice. Questions, comments, Janice?
No, thank you, Brent. I think that is a very encouraging report.
All right. Larry.
Yes, thank you for the report, Brent. I did have one question. You mentioned that a couple of the candidates were out of, were away, would have to move. Do we have a requirement that the general manager be a resident of Kensington?
No, you don't. In normal times, the general criteria is that you say, the district says we want you to keep regular office hours and you need to be able to be in the office during those hours. That will probably be, so it's got to be within commute range generally in normal times. These aren't normal times, but I don't think we're going to do a contract, you are, with a finalist that doesn't, at least isn't able to respond when times get back to normal. And they can actually have an office. Okay, but so
when you say they're out of the area, you mean they're out of commute range even? Like they're, yes, they're in Tucson or?
Yeah, one's way up north and one's way down south, it turns out. They're both in California. They're just not in commute
Thank
range
you.
Of Kensington.
No other comments.
Thanks, Larry. Kevin, any questions or comments from you?
No, I'm fine. Thanks, Brent.
Brent, I was kind of going over some of our past action items related to this, and I just wanted to make sure that I'm remembering correctly and to see what you're communicating with the candidates. The board did authorize a posting that said that the SAE could be as high as 80%, subject to policy of the board. Is that what you're telling the candidates?
I'm being very coy about the actual amount. I said it can range from 50 to 80% depending on the needs. but the needs would have to be something that would be driven by a board action to change. In general terms, it's going to be between that range. I'm not really authorized to say, look, you're going to get at least 60% or 70% out of this. I really don't know. I tell you, I think it would be, certainly when we get to the point where we say, this is the person we want, they're going to want to know, basically, can we narrow that range a little bit? I think that's a reasonable request. So that's going to be something you have to talk about.
Thank you.
I think we'll have the information from how many hours Mary has been putting in that will guide our determination then, probably, Brent.
Yeah, Mary and I have talked about that, and I believe Mary, you know, she's got the most recent experience at that level, and you guys know what's coming, and so that's important to factor into this.
Julie's muted. You're muted.
Julie's muted.
Sorry. I just want to ask Mary or Michael if either of you have any comments on Brent's report before we go to the public.
No, I don't have any comments.
Okay. All right. So we have right now 17 members of the public, maybe 18, a couple of large call. So Mary, do you see any hands raised on this?
I do not see. No.
All right then. So with no comment from the public, the action item is to accept the report from BHI Consulting. Do I have a motion to accept the report?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Second by Don, motion by Janice. I'm in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Motion carries. The report's accepted. Brent, thank you very much for your diligent and professional work on this, and we'll look forward to the next steps.
Thank you. I do too. I'll report to the committee as soon as the posting closes on what the situation looks like. Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So the next item on our agenda is to review, it says the letter, but now we have two letters, right, Mary?
That's correct.
From RGS in response to payment dispute and determine action. So it is listed as an action item. We actually do have our district counsel, Rachel Huntley, on the line, who I think may be able to at least available for questions if the board could have them. And Mary, should I turn this over to you to present it to the board?
Sure, that would be great. Okay. I included the letter, the response letter, and a staff report to kind of describe some options, not all inclusive options, and what the current situation is. So with the response letter that the district received from RGS, the potential actions that I came up with thus far are to accept the credit issued by RGS and authorize payment of the April invoice and remaining balance of the May invoice, or to direct the interim general manager, me, to continue dispute with assistance from legal counsel, or other action as deemed appropriate by the board after discussion. The response letter responded to each of the district's concerns that were listed in our letter to RGS related to the April invoice, and we did get a response on May. With May, there's not as much detail, so I think that the April is probably the best for discussion at this point. So the letter from RGS offered credits for some of the items that we cited as being concerns of $3,902.60. So for the particular April invoice, that would leave $21,485.75. And then the remaining balance for May, as you recall, the board would recall we paid 49.1%, so of May. The remaining on that one would be $7,821.68. If those happen to both be paid, the total to RGS then, including that $3,900 credit, would be $186,495.40. So at this point, the board can consider those balances, those credits, consider whether we would want to continue to dispute, take, you know, advice counsel from legal counsel. The thing that I do want to just point out as a consideration is just through the June invoice with respect to legal fees. Of course, there are fees involved in fighting the matter. We've incurred charges of $1,365, and there will be some, I believe, billed in July. So that's just something to consider, not any reason to stop, but of course, consider the cost of legal charges as well as staff time that it takes away from being able to deal with other district matters. So the balance would be included in the budget. That contract was $200,000+, so we'd be well below that. So, and then the May response simply said that they would request more specific concerns to potentially offer any additional credit.
And I think just to add, I think one of the things that I read the May response, I don't actually have it open on my computer right now, but they sort of asserted that if we were unhappy, we should have terminated the agreement, when actually we do have mediation as a means to settle any dissatisfaction with their services. I'm summarizing, but am I getting it approximately right?
Yes.
Yes.
I have a comment if you're ready to take board comments.
Yeah, do you mind if I just keep running through in alphabetical order? But then,
okay,
yeah, I don't know, it just helps it go faster. not to prejudice anyone by the first letter of their last name, but so Don, let me turn to you, and then Janice will be next. Do you have any comments?
I think we've gotten where we probably the best we're going to do, and we should just close it up and not spend any more money. That's my guess. I mean, I read the letter, and there's some things are giving credits for the C, and there's some other things that maybe they are kind of muddy on from their side. But I think it's time to fold the tent, leave.
Okay. Yes.
Are you calling on me? All I'm getting is static.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I am. I'm calling on Janice, and I'll mute myself in between.
Okay. My concern is their work was not done in a timely manner or in a quality manner. We got our financials months after the relevant date. We got their bills, I think maybe 4 months into it, we got a bill that showed that we had already exhausted the initial contract amount. So I don't think they did the work in a professional manner. And I think if we had gotten timely billings, we could have responded and corrected a lot of these, what I believe to be unprofessional work product. And I think they're crediting us with nickels and dimes as opposed to what they really should be crediting us with. So my preference would be to go forward.
Thank you, Janice. I think those are very relevant comments that I don't know what my preference is, but I agree with your comments. By the time we figured out how far into it they were and how far over budget, it was, you know, their billing was late, everything was late. But now let me go to Larry, you're next alphabetically.
Yes, I'm assuming that this is what they're offering us, some rebate on our April bill. They're offering us not very much. They're offering us $4,000 out of $25,000. Are they, is this like Are they offering us any rebates? How many more bills are there?
The only other outstanding invoice is the remaining percentage of the May invoice.
So after the May invoice is done, we're done with them?
Correct. After, yes.
They're not offering us anything back on this $15,366 for May?
Not currently. What they asked for was if we wanted to point to some specific instances that they would look at those occurrences to see if there was any credit due.
Well, I guess my comment is, I think all of the board members are not satisfied at all with their with what they've done for us, and the question is, do we want to spend any more time on this, or do we just want to cut them free and certainly not use them again? I agree with Janice. If there were any point in us carrying on, I would be in favor of that, but it doesn't look like it's going to buy us anything. And maybe we just need to move on to more important issues. We probably can get another couple $1,000s from them, but out of $200,000, maybe that's not really relevant. So I really don't like giving them anything, but I realize that we have to pay them something to get this over with. So I'm willing to grit my teeth and pay them, I suppose.
Thanks, Larry. I'll turn it over to Karen for your comments.
Thank you, Julie. First of all, for judgment on this, I would defer, first of all, to Julie, who put in 6 months of backbreaking work and who knows the situation better than anyone, and to Rachel, who I think should be our arbiter in terms of what is legally acceptable. Mary, could I suggest that either, if Paul Moss could either be removed as a panelist or muted, because a lot of his stuff is coming through.
He is muted.
He's not a panelist.
He's muted. Okay, good. Now he's okay. Good.
Sometimes people linger there after you let them make public comment. Their name lingers, and it looks like they're a panelist.
Yeah. So my first two points are to defer to Julie and to Rachel in two different ways. I also feel that the RGS letter is correct in some parts, that there were not enough specifics to tell them what specifically should be removed for definitive actions. I think more were done than they're acknowledging, but I'm not sure how far we're going to get on that. At the bottom of page 44, they say that, well, we understand the district is now expressing dissatisfaction on two occasions, once in January, again on March. The district board approved increases the amount of our agreement from initial $36,285,000. Neither represents the actions of a dissatisfied board. Well, we're talking about actions that they took in months that were after that, first of all. So this is irrelevant. Second, they had us over a barrel, and we were in very bad, we'd already gone very far with them, and it was not worth going any farther on this. Later on, and I don't even have to because you understand this, when we objected to the pay grades of the people who were doing routine jobs, they responded that they could assign anyone they want to projects. First of all, I do not think that was either in the letter or the spirit of the contract. And second, even if it was, it's bad business practice, because it means that you're finding make work jobs for highly paid people that you're not getting enough work for, so you're forcing them off on us. Having said that, I believe that Don is correct for various reasons. It's the course we have to take to move past this. And we do not sign a non-disclosure agreement. So anyone who asks us about the performance of RGS, we can certainly talk about the good things they did and the things that gave perhaps less satisfaction.
I don't think they'll be using us as a reference, Kevin.
Well, a smart person will ask around, and I think they can find out who's been using them, and I absolutely agree with you. They're definitely not going to use us as a reference.
Thank you, Kevin. You know, my comments are very similar. To the point that they made that past invoices were paid, so that's water under the bridge. There's no dispute there. I mean, I think that we paid some of those invoices in good faith that the work product would be forthcoming. For example, the attendance of one of their employees at our finance committee specifically to take the minutes to deliver the recording. We paid her travel costs. And yes, we paid that, but I think that we expected that she'd produce minutes. And it was only a result of this dispute that ended up with minutes being produced. And they acknowledged that's why they had her attend that meeting in the first place. And I think if you want to just dissect this letter, for example, the bank did not require their employee to provide a social security number. I was on the line with Mary when she signed up for banking, and it was clearly marked as an optional field. So there's a lot to probably dispute without actually getting anywhere. And my concern is that I can imagine this is taking a huge amount of Mary's time, and to further discuss it is going to take more of Mary's time, and all of the time that Mary spends on this is money that we're losing on progress with the public safety building. And I think if you go dollar for dollar, the losses lay on the public safety building are much greater. And the other thing is just they seem to be able to kind of get out of everything by the actual fact that the contract did say that they have the right to assign whoever they want, get the work done however they want. And I agree, and that was reviewed and approved by our attorney. I agree that they did not know the spirit of this by, even the letter, by assigning the lowest paid available person to the test. But I think we talked about in January, I mentioned that they don't have a very deep bench. And I think that's the problem that we face with them, is they really do not have very many people at a, you know, kind of a more administrative level to assign to this job. So I tend to feel way down feels, not speaking for you, Larry, but cut our losses and move on and not feel good about it. I would like to see if who has anything that you might be able to offer to us if we should try to move forward with a dispute. What would be our option? Excuse me,
Before we talk any further, meaning no disrespect, if people could please mute themselves when they're not talking, because there's a lot of echo from Janice's phone that I see is showing up as interfering with what Julie and other people are saying. So if Janice, I'm sorry, if you would just hit mute when you're not talking, or if Mary could, I don't know, whatever you want to do, it would, because Julie was cutting out there. I'm sorry.
Okay. Is there anything you think you didn't hear from me that you'd like me to repeat?
I wasn't completely clear in the last few sentences. But I think you were agreeing with Don that it's just time to get over this.
As unhappy as it might make us, I was just saying that this is a lot of work for Mary to continue this dispute and write letters and gather details. And I think that, you know, her time, the leverage between spending her time on this and spending our time moving the public safety building forward. I mean, dollar for dollar, I think we'd be saving a lot more money if Mary was able to leave this behind her and focus more on the public safety building. I think she's got a very full plate, and this isn't making it any easier. And so then I just basically wondered if Rachel could give us an overview of our options if we did want to continue to dispute this.
Certainly, I had to put on my professional person jacket. So it's situations like this are always tough because even when you think that you're probably on the right side, there's still costs moving ahead and uncertainty where you're going to end up. The most recent letter from them I found a little disappointing with the relationship that the district had with RGS. You know, there was a standard of performance that was agreed to. And so they're talking about the clause where any client that's dissatisfied with their work can just cancel the contract, which is just a termination term. But all of the work was supposed to be up to a certain standard of performance. And it seems like there's perhaps real questions by the board whether that actually happened. The decision of whether to move forward, you know, it's always a cost benefit analysis because there's more work to be done to be in a place where sort of taking the next formal steps. The next official formal step would be the contract does require mediation, which is good because it's less costly than litigation, but you still need to be prepared as if you were for litigation. And then that's not binding. So then you can decide if you like the decision or not and then take legal action if you want. There's one more step even prior to mediation where the contract gives the district the authority to audit the records that RGS has related to its services. So if there was an interest in sort of exploring this further, that's an option. I think the point about sort of even the costs in that and Mary's time and the contract does have an attorney's fee provision, so if you were ultimately successful at the very end, you could probably, if you were successful, you would get, you know, the time that you paid for with Myers-Nabe. So that'd be nice. Of course, there's always a chance that it could land on the other side. So it's, I think that if there was interest in moving forward, I would suggest requesting to audit the records, knowing that that would take Mary time to look through those, and there might be reasons that you would not want her to spend that time that way. So it's a tough position to be in, even if you are probably on the right side of things. So there's anything else specifically I can address, Julie or anybody else, I'm happy to.
Let me just run the round again. I'm sorry for my dog. I'll mute in a minute. But Don, do you have any response or further comment?
No, I think we're getting around to the fact that we're going to have to eat some, but we just have to get done with this.
Janice, how about you? You are apparently muted. There you go.
She was.
Now she's muted again.
Janice?
I prefer to continue the dispute.
May I ask by that, do you have a preference, audit the records first or go straight to mediation, or what are your thoughts there?
I don't think you can go to mediation without the audit.
Okay. Larry, you're next.
Yeah, my experience with litigation is when you litigate because you feel you're on the right side or you want to punish someone, or you end up just wasting your money. And I think we could go forward and we could be victorious, but still lose money on the deal, and I just as soon let it drop.
Hey, Larry. Kevin?
I'd agree with Larry and Don. This is a really good way to waste money.
Well, and I also...
if it was $300,000 worth rather than $40, you know, it's we have 40,000 and we're arguing about whatever it is. I mean, it's not worth the effort to do anything more, not one more minute.
Thanks, Don. And I guess, you know, there is this temptation to, on my side, to want to audit the records, but, you know, I tried to really review all of those invoices whenever we got them. And the problem is that it was just very, very difficult because of the way they would bunch like 25 items into 4 hours. And I, you know, there were some that I knew that they spent like no time at all. Like maybe they said the word or something. and then others, like, you just don't know what went into that 4 hour block of time. And I'm kind of afraid we wouldn't learn anything further by auditing the records. Because I really did try to be able to dispute some charges that were very specific as we went along. But after a certain point, it became very difficult.
We could certainly determine the timeliness of the work they did.
Okay, so I think, why don't we give the public a chance? Well, let me see first. Do we have a motion that the public can comment on?
I would move that we consider this the best we're going to do and move on.
So Don, let's be specific. Does that translate into you'd like us to pay the remainder of the April and May bills?
Is there any reason to pick on those bills?
That's all that's
left. Pay them.
Mary, can you just give us a summary of where we are so that we can make a well-formulated motion?
And what are you talking about, the wording or?
Well, I just mean what's still outstanding.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of an option for us to say yes or no.
So there's a remaining balance on the April invoice after the credit of $21,485.75. And the remaining on May is $7,821.68. So that's just over $29,000.
And June, we elected June.
It was 1300, I think.
Yeah, so we have two outstanding invoices and we have to decide whether to pay one or both or neither.
And so, Mary, is there good cause to pay or not pay with those two invoices? What's the quality of them?
As far as the credit that they've given us for April, I mean, it's related to what we cited as being specific instances. If we try to go back for May to pick out more instances, we could. I'm just not clear that we'd get any significant dollar return on that. So it's just really the board's decision on whether or not to pay. And in the past, when I've had contracts like this, sometimes you do pay just to push that behind you once you've tried as hard as you can. But as I say, that's a board decision. Julie, you're muted.
Sorry, yeah. All right, let's try this again. Before we go out to the public, do we have a motion from the board now being clear that we have two invoices that still have balances? Anybody want to make a so lack of a motion, lack of action means that, what does that mean, folks?
That you don't pay.
Well, I'm just gonna go out there then and see what happens. So I move that we pay the balance on the April and May invoices to wrap up our relationship with RGS.
I'll second that.
Okay, second by Kevin.
I would like to make a friendly amendment that in exchange for that, we get a letter from them saying that they're not going to, they will submit no further invoices or send us any further bills for their services, and that our relationship with them is effectively canceled.
I accept that friendly amendment, Larry. That seems like an excellent idea. Kevin, does your second to the motion still stand?
Oh, sure.
All righty. Let's see if the public has anything to offer us. We have 14 people on the line.
I don't see any hands raised.
I don't either. All right, then. Any further discussion before we vote on this, then? Comments by the board? All right. I vote in favor of the motion with Larry's friendly amendment. Kevin?
Agree.
Was that? I didn't hear it clearly.
Agree.
Agree. Okay. Let me see. Don?
Yes.
Janice?
No.
Larry? Larry, you were muted.
Yes.
Thanks, Larry. All right, the motion carries 4-1. Mary, just to make sure, do you have everything you need from us for next steps?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. All right, it's 8:16, and now we have four more administrative items ahead of us before we take a 5-minute break. And they are somewhat related, but let's try taking them in order if they can be separated. There are three items that involve the district's discrimination, harassment, and retaliation prevention policy. So there's a policy, which is item 4.3, policy 170. There's a complaint and investigation procedure, policy 180. And then there is a new policy 185 for training requirements, which is 4.5. So let's give it a shot to take these items one at a time. Item 4.3, this came before us once, but the board wanted to have some time to study it, to have some time to ask questions to the attorney in between meetings, and then also to have an attorney present at the meetings to respond to our questions in real time.
Julie, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble here. The echo through Janice's phone is interfering. If Janice can mute her phone, it would be great.
All right, I'm not gonna repeat any of that, Kevin, because it was just kind of a lead in.
Yeah, I got it.
Let's start with 4.3. So just do the cursory, request for, well, first of all, I'd like to ask if Mary has anything she'd like to add, and then I'll go to the board members.
No, I really just put in the summary of, providing the policies and there for board discussion tonight.
Alrighty. So let's just do a quick run through with everybody and see how the first pass goes, because this would be the first reading of two readings to adopt the policy if people are happy with it as it is. So Don, do you have any comments or questions that you'd like to make?
No, but I may change my mind if someone else comes in with something I missed.
Okay, and maybe what we could try is if people have questions or comments, maybe I have a feeling that Rachel will be the one to answer them. So maybe let's see, Rachel, if it works for you to just sort of kind of keep track. So we'll see how that goes. Let's see, after Don comes Janice. Janice, do you have questions or comments that you'd like to make?
No, I made my comments to Angelica on her earlier drafts.
All right, thank you. Next we go to Larry.
I'm very happy with this. It seems to be pretty vanilla, straight out of the California Special Districts Association playbook, and I don't have any problem with it. Of course, that's my non-lawyerly opinion, but it seems fine to me.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Larry. Kevin.
I would like to move to postpone consideration of this item. And the reason is that of comments that have been submitted to the attorneys, it's not clear whether they were able to review them, incorporate them, accept or reject or respond in any way. And I think that rather than go through a tedious line editing of every single thing, we give them time to review what has been submitted to them and come back to us at a future date with another copy, another version, that either incorporates or says why they didn't want to incorporate certain things that were brought up as problematic to what needs to be a very, very strong policy.
To that effect, I'll just say that after everyone has commented, I did receive some comments, and I'm prepared to speak to them, and then the board can perhaps can decide what they want to do.
Well, in response to that, Rachel, if we went through the comments that I sent, which were six single space pages, I think we'd be here for far longer than the 20 minutes that Julie would like to allot. And I think this deserves reasonable hearing. So my motion to postpone stands at the moment.
Well, let's just see. I mean, we can continue with comments because I just have some questions, but let's see if we have a second for Kevin's motion to postpone this item. I'm hearing no motion, no second. So I think we move ahead. If someone was muted and they meant to second it, you can raise your hand or speak up, but I think we move ahead. So Kevin, did you have any questions you wanted to ask during the call tonight or comments? I have a few, but.
Well, you had the chance to, you need a chance to speak, Julie, right? And then Rachel said she wanted to speak.
Okay, all right. So Rachel, maybe you had planned to address these questions anyway. I'll just kind of tell you what comes to my mind when I read this. And I know that this is quite common for these policies, but I just think it's worth maybe saying out loud and getting clarification. Am I unmuted? It seems to me that all of the behaviors and everything that's essentially referenced under discrimination, harassment, sexual harassment, really seems to pertain to those behaviors directed at someone in the protected class. And there is a definition, a protected category rather, and there is a definition of protected category, and it contains, you know, let's see, race, color, religion, creed, national origin, ancestry, citizenship, status, and quite a few other things. I guess my question was, if these behaviors were directed towards someone who was not in the protected category, does that mean they're okay? That there's no claim, there's no complaint that can be made? Is it only the status of the person to whom they're directed? And the second thing I had was just, I think in, was one of the other two documents, I don't think it was 170, there was a reference to bullying, but this policy is about discrimination, harassment, and retaliation prevention, all three of which are defined, those behaviors. But then there is a reference to bullying in one of the other policies, and my experience at the university is they're putting a lot of effort into also defining what is bullying. And so if we're going to be trained, if everyone is going to be trained and kind of held accountable also for bullying, to me it seems like it would help to give some sense of how is that different than discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. And then I guess finally my other comment is that I didn't so much like that the fact that this refers to board members is essentially just a footnote. It's scope of protection, and then 170.40, the DHR policy applies to all district employees with a superscript 2, which is then a footnote number 2, and then it says in the fine print, here and after used in the policy, employees includes interns, volunteers, contractors, and elected or appointed officials. And I just thought that was too important to be relegated to a footnote. So those are my comments at this stage of the game.
Could you direct me to which section you're looking at for the footnote?
Yeah, it's it shows where we have in the package, it says item 4.3 in the header, and we get started on policy 170. There's a page number 8 at the bottom, and then the next page has page 9, and the actual article is 170.4, scope of protection. The first sentence there, it says the DHR policy applies to all district employees, superscript 2. And then superscript 2 goes down to the bottom of the page where there's some smaller print, and it's defined at the bottom of page 9.
Certainly. So the definition that you mentioned that lists all those, I have in section 170.40 that the here that not only in the footnote, but also beside in the text here. I'm not sure. I can't explain why that the list is here twice. I guess because it's defining the term. But in the section itself, it also lists all of these applicants, interns, volunteers, contractors, and elected or appointed officials.
Rachel, I think Angelica did it that way because this is going in the employee handbook. And even though it's in the employee handbook, we wanted the scope to be broader than employees. And then there's a cross-reference, I believe, over in our policy manual that this applies to everyone, not just the employees. And I think that's the way Angelica chose to draft it, because she wanted it in the employee handbook. And then the footnote is to clarify that it's more than employees that are regulated by this.
Excuse me, but
I did get distracted by the superscript and I went immediately to the bottom. I didn't finish reading the rest of the sentence. So sorry about that.
Certainly, and yeah. I'll just note that the this list here that you see, it illustrates the direction the state legislature has been going the last couple of years. Like, it used to be only supervisors, only agencies with more than 50 employees. Now it's sort of, they're opening it up to everybody and agencies over 5 employees. And so including all the things like volunteers and contractors, that's all directly from mandates the state legislature has been doing, where they want it to be interpreted as broadly as possible. And they're trying to figure out, you know, every person that comes into contact with them, like how can they include them too. So the idea from the legislature is to make it very expansive, and so that's why it appears to be like it's making it far more expanded.
I think it's a bit uncomfortable if a board member is going to interpret what the lawyers did at a given time and that lawyer is not present to respond to the concerns and questions that we had. No disrespect, Rachel, but if Angelica did this work, it kind of seems that we don't want someone else interpreting Angelica's work as a board member.
There was a plan for Angelica to be at this meeting, but given the nature of some of the comments submitted that were far beyond the scope of what she worked on, the employment group decided that it would be better relegated back to the public law group, and that is why you all get me in instead. But I do have a few comments to share based on the comments that were received. On the substantive side, you know, the way that they wrote these policies, you know, are in line with the sort of new wave of these types of policies after the legislation of the last 2 years. It's stark contrast to the policy that the district had, but it's because it's been a while and things have been rapidly changing. So substantively, these things are in line with what is legally required and sort of putting the district in a place where it is firmly establishing, you know, the type of workplace it has for its employees and for all of the people that cross paths with the district, volunteers, contractors, and it applies to the district on both sides, or the directors on both sides. It also protects directors from harassment as well. Some of the comments that we received were concerned about the amount billed. This was something that I had not seen until comments were raised, and we share your concerns on that. And John has pulled the bills from this project and is reviewing them, and he plans to get in touch with Mary to talk about what he thinks would be appropriate in that regard. And I think that was a good thing to bring up, the person who brought it up. So if there are other specific questions that anybody would like to ask.
Are you able to comment on the one question that I had, in the sense that I do understand that this is how these policies read, but it still strikes me by reading it that if you don't fall into a protected category and you're harassed or discriminated against, there's no recourse. I mean, is it the individual's obligation to figure out if they fall into one of these protected categories before filing a complaint?
Well, so there's sort of two parallel paths. One is sort of focused on the protected classes and sort of things related to that. But harassment is, you know, something that's geared towards everybody. And so that section is 170.80. And this is the section that defines the behavior that is harassment, where it is the behavior itself that is prohibited. So on one side you have sort of a protected class and sort of things related to that, but harassment is something that somebody does and sort of is like for anybody. And so the behavior described in harassment would apply to anybody that is protected by the policy would then be able to benefit from the fact that that is prohibited.
Yes, it still refers to based on any of the protected categories provided in policy number
170.3. Let's see. So I read this sentence as being inclusive rather than exclusive. So we have our disrespectful and professional conduct. And then as a subset of that, we have specifically conduct based on any of the things on our discrimination policy. And so with most people, like sexual harassment being the one that people are sort of most familiar with conceptually, outside of discrimination based on a protected class, but so defining sort of the behavior that rises to the level of being unprofessional enough to be harassment, it sort of gets put into these categories like sort of discrimination-related harassment related to a protected class, sexual harassment, which is something more commonly understood these days, and then we go to Me Too, and the policy includes sort of examples of that, and then see what else. So those are basically sort of the two parallel paths, because other types of unprofessional behavior, when it's not really based on some sort of trait that you have that is protected, like then you sort of get into where it's just like, well, are they being rude? Are they just being mean? But when it's directed in one of these ways, is it because they're in a protected class or is it because it's sexual harassment? These are the two that this policy holds, covers.
Thank you. Let's see, including Mary and Chief Pagoni, are there any other questions from anybody on the board or staff, basically?
Well, yeah, I have 5 single space pages of questions, which is why I suggested that maybe the attorney should have a chance to respond to them. Rachel didn't, but obviously she's not the person working on this. And so I don't think it's appropriate to ask her to do all these things, but if you want to ask her, I can start going through them one by one.
So I did not keep track of when we started talking about this. We were going to look at a 20-minute limit, but...
For that point, I'll just say that your comments were forwarded both to Angelica and then to the head of our employment group that reviewed them. And we had asked her if, based on any of your comments, that any revisions to the policy were recommended, and she did not recommend any further revisions.
Is that right? Well, then I'll have to make them public so that people can see just what the conceptual problems are with this and how some of these passages are not in line with best practices. Julie and I, for 2 people, have taken this kind of training at the university for 20 years. And, you know, we do have a good deal of experience on this in our departments and various things. And I will tell you that the problem that Julie brought up to you that you tried to explain, Rachel, could be easily alleviated if the term creating a hostile workplace environment was an umbrella, for example, covering discrimination, harassment, and retaliation, because each of these creates a hostile work environment. Right now, creating a hostile work environment, as Julie points out, is only a subsection of one of your categories. It's completely out of line with modern practices. Your other problems are legion, including that toward the end when you were talking about, let's see, complaint investigation procedures, there are actually no procedures. There are no procedures at all. Nothing is set up. In your section 180, preventive, corrective, and remedial action, you have no preventive action. You have no remedial actions.
That's the next agenda item. So I just want to keep things in order here, and we're on 170 right now. So if you don't mind bringing that up when we get to the next agenda item.
So if Kevin can't get the votes it takes to continue it, we could go ahead and vote it, and we may have enough that Kevin has left out, and I don't mind. I mean, it's fine with me if he doesn't have the votes. I don't know that we have to, the world stops because he's got something on his own, but it's not supported across the board.
If you don't know what it is, Don, how can you just say it should be discounted?
You wanted to forward it, not using the right term, but to hold it, not act on it. And you didn't get any help on that. It was quiet. So if the rest of us don't have the same problems that you have, but you don't have enough votes to make that stick.
I think you have it backwards, Don, with respect. If you don't know what the problem is that's being raised, how do you know that if it were raised, the votes wouldn't come in?
Well, I remember that Julie called for how did that work, Julie? I'm forgetting.
This is a first reading.
Yeah.
And made a motion that we postpone it. Remember, we're going to need a second reading of this at a regular meeting to adopt it as a policy. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure how this is all going to play out, but without knowing what Kevin's questions were, we just heard something about hostile work environment that kind of relates to the point I brought up about having more of an umbrella policy, but quite honestly, it doesn't say action, it just says first reading. So you could come back with something, Kevin, for the second reading where we understand better what your concerns are. I suppose that's an option.
I just say I'm finding it flabbergasting that an attorney could get basically 3,000 words and find nothing in it that should even modify a single sentence of a document that was put out. I mean,
why don't we do this so we can move on, because we've been talking. Why don't we just move on because it has a second reading, and then whatever happens between now and then, we'll do it again. I don't see there's worth any more time to spend on this.
If I could just add one thing about hostile work environment, it is a term that's used in different places. In this policy, it's being used specifically in the context of sexual harassment and creating a hostile work environment based on that. But generally, in employment law, hostile work environment is a much bigger category that you can use, and there's statutes related to it, but they're not the same thing as this policy. So this policy is saying these are things that in this context are a hostile work environment, and they're related to sexual harassment, and it's underneath our sexual harassment policy. Now, the district could get into trouble with hostile work environment, but something not related to sexual harassment, but that goes to different statutes under the labor code. And so there's sort of different concepts here of hostile work environment, where this policy is sort of isolating, focusing, saying that we acknowledge that this behavior that we agree it creates a hostile work environment, rather than when you're doing the labor code, it's where you have to establish that the behavior and sort of the repetition of it created something that reached the level of what they recognize as hostile. So it's not all the same thing.
So discriminating against someone on the basis of national origin would not be creating a hostile work environment.
Well, this is if you would like a more exhaustive policy, then we can work on that as well.
Well, yes, but this is an anti-DHR policy. That means discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. And so all these things are considered, and I don't understand why a more umbrella-like policy on this doesn't make sense from a conceptual viewpoint. I mean, I think Julie's question is spot on. I have the same question. It seems only certain classes of, and also as you point out, you know, you're looking at a pattern of behavior. That's very important. But this, as written, does not distinguish anything.
We should move on. We just keep, this is making no sense.
It's making a lot of sense.
We have a second reading.
I think it would help the rest of us, Kevin, if we could get a better sense of your concerns for a second reading. And then we would have a better idea of where there are gaps, if there are gaps. Because we have a long night ahead of us. So I don't think we actually have to take an action on a first reading, but.
If the board desired, sorry, there's some trucks driving by. Prior to your second reading, if the board supported having a detailed response to Director Padian's comments, that could happen between now and your next meeting. It will take some time for the employment group to do that, but that can happen.
So that's something that the board, that would be an expense that I think the board would have to agree on. A majority would need to agree on that. Am I hearing that? It's like asking a legal opinion, I think.
It's you know, in the view of sort of the, when we passed it along to them, their response was that they did not see anything in the comments that warranted any revisions to the draft that has been submitted to the board. If you would like explanations why that is, that can be it. But.
Well, we haven't had a budget so far for this project, which is going to run us into five figures. So I'm not sure why a budget is necessary now. But Julie, whatever you want to do is fine.
Well, let me see if I have a motion to accept what's before us as a first reading, with the understanding that and this is getting long, but my thought is that Kevin can inform us more of his concerns during the second reading. Does that seem like a reasonable way to kind of wrap this up And it's because we have two more elements of this to cover.
I think maybe Kevin should share his 6-page single space document with the rest of us before the next meeting. And then we can determine whether or not we want to exceed our 20-minute time limit on it next time.
I think that's reasonable. I just don't think we're going to learn more about this. I mean, I feel satisfied with the answers to my question, because what I'm hearing Rachel say is that there are actions that could take place from one person against another that are not necessarily captured in this policy, but that could be covered by other government codes, such as the labor code. So this is not really letting anyone off the hook, that if your victim or your other party, it doesn't fall into a protected category, that doesn't mean that someone can behave however they want to them.
Julie, just a point of order. I don't think a motion is necessary because this is a first reading and no action is required. So I think we've had our reading and we can move on.
All right. We've kind of done it both ways, Larry, in the past, which is why I'm just a little uncertain about how to proceed. But I think I'm fine with moving on. I think we've reached our time limit. I agree with Janice. Let's as an information only item, let's learn about the concerns.
As a matter of just proceeding farther, though, if I may, Rachel, is it incorrect to say that it is illegal under either state or federal codes to discriminate against people on the basis of these categories and to harass them and to retaliate against them? Is that part of any law beyond our board?
Certainly.
Well, then why do we need this policy at all?
Because it is, one, because you have to have policies like this, and two, that is the public agency's responsibility to adopt these policies, so it is establishing an environment where these things don't happen. So it's like it's illegal on this side, but then it's also the responsibility is on the agency to have these policies, because it has also responsibility for keeping the environment safe and free of harassment for its employees.
But apparently,
this is like a protective measure for the district.
Yeah, but what,
by having these policies,
be included and not included is apparently arbitrary. Okay.
Well, you know, I don't know if you folks remember, but I think the law changed at the beginning of the year, but Myers-Navé did send us an advisory that all agencies are required to update their policies. I mean, we still have some time, as I understand it, based on the legal deadline to update the policies, but we have to update the policies. All right, I'm going to move on. Thank you, everybody, for this discussion. We have a related discussion now, a first reading of Policy 180, Complaint and Investigation Procedures. And so, Rachel, would it be easier if you made your comments first, or do you want me to go around? What do you think is the most efficient? You're muted, though.
We're looking at 4.5.
We are now on 4.4.
4.4.
For this one, I don't have any comments from the outset, so I can listen and respond to anything that comes up in board discussion.
All right. Don, did you have any comments or questions on Policy 180, Complaint and Investigation Procedures?
No.
Janice? You're muted, Janice.
No.
Okay, Larry.
No, I'm happy with this. It's again a pretty vanilla CSDA document. I don't have any problems.
All right, Kevin.
I have a number of them, but apparently the attorneys don't feel that they're relevant.
Would you be able to just give us a sense or a summary or a flavor? Okay.
It's inappropriate to encourage someone to, quote, immediately tell the offending individual the behavior is inappropriate. Someone may feel uncomfortable doing that. It's not the only choice you have. The clauses are all backwards. It's not The section should also contain explicit language to indicate it's not necessary to communicate immediately a sense of appropriateness to an individual. You don't even have to talk to them. I mean, this is so elementary. Section 180.30 violates the procedure in the above paragraph. It should provide a clear choice between those two options. In the subsection 2, all the material in that paragraph after the first sentence ending with general manager has to be deleted and incorporated into subsection 3, because that text doesn't say what the employee should do. It says what the manager should do. I mean, should I go on? It's like, and the same thing, the subsection 4 does not define who or what qualified personnel may be to adjudicate these complaints and who determines this. It leaves the door open for subjective and even retaliatory procedures. There is no process at all for adjudicating any matters that arise. It leaves them open by simply referring to an investigation. I mean, why don't you say, refer them to the district council? But in doing so, you cannot abrogate any complainants or defendants' legal rights. You can't prohibit any further mediatory legal action. You can't force people to take your process. They may choose to do something else. And this just boggles my mind that they don't see that this language could be improved. In fact, this section 180.30 was written in a way that will ensure that anyone will think twice before they submit a concern or a complaint, because you don't tell people at the outset whether this is going to be a confidential or whether all these details may be revealed to the internet. Anyone who wants to listen, should someone on the board decide to do so later on. There's absolutely nothing laid out here. And that means that people may refuse to complain against their superiors and the fire department or wherever, because they may feel that their privacy and confidentiality won't be respected. And as if I can go farther, and I started to say before, under the section 180.50 on preventative correction and remedial action, the section has nothing to do with preventive or remedial action, and it does a poor job on corrective action, only provides a very vague statement on this. You can't say that you're taking action when you provide no course of action. Okay, you can't say, oh, well, there's a problem. It can just be down to changing supervisor relationships, work locations, reassigning. Well, we have a district of one employee. It's not, you know, you might just call this punitive action because nothing is being helped. There is nothing in this policy that says anything about preventive action. There's nothing that says anything about remedial action. And there is nothing in this section that says how the district investigates complaints. And I'm just really concerned that you can put this policy into place and you can get like 70% of the way there, but filling in the missing parts and changing the parts that aren't in the right places and aren't logically constructed could really improve this.
That point I will, so this process here, so the focus of these policies here is on, it is on the district, it is the environment of the district, and it is creating a safe place at the district where people work, volunteer, contract with, are elected officials for. And so these internal investigations, they are done for the agency to be able to look to see if there is a problem inside of it so that it can fix a problem inside of it. It's not this isn't the same field of where somebody goes to get, you know, more of an external, you know, if they remedy to the situation internally. So we look at our operations, we see, is there a bad situation here? Is there things that we can do? Can we move people around? Do we need to dismiss somebody? So we're looking at the way that we operate and we're investigating and make sure that we are not doing things to create an environment that is making people unsafe. And so as you'll see, the next policy is sort of focusing outward, sort of like outside of the district. But these policies are all about the way that we operate and making sure that our operation is safe. So there's different things, you know, there's different remedies available for the individual, but this view is from from the district.
But by omitting any details of procedure and by not having any details on retaliation and what that means, or on discrimination, what that means and what you do with it. There are no procedures here. And so you can't talk about remediation and preventative actions when you have no preventative or remedial processes or remedies listed. You can't just say you have them when you don't have them. And they're not here, and it would not be difficult to put them in. I suggested some text as a starting point, but apparently your group doesn't feel that it needs any more work. So, you know, figure that out.
Let me see. I did have just a little bit of a question where I do think it's not entirely clear. So first of all, it refers to the district throughout this. It does address confidentiality, Kevin, to the extent possible. The district will endeavor to keep the reporting of the applicant or employee's concerns confidential. However, complete confidentiality cannot be guaranteed when it interferes with the district's ability to fulfill its obligations under this policy. So in this case,
what does that even mean? That's a nonsensical statement. It says we have a policy, and so we can be confidential only if it appears with our policy. But what's your policy? It's not there. It doesn't say. We need to do this right, and we aren't, as Julie, you point out, it's not an incredibly big hurry. We can get this right. This policy needs to be stronger than it is, in my view. And I don't mean to make Don and Larry and other people, you know, frustrated by this, but it would be so easy to improve this. And I'm just absolutely flabbergasted that your attorney doesn't find even one word that should be changed. Wow.
What I was planning to ask you is, by the district, is the first order representative of the district the general manager, who would take the actions that are mentioned here? But then also by the district, does it collectively refer to all board members? For example, keeping confidentiality, if the general manager is the individual who's carrying, you know, the weight on this, still, if the board members are informed, the district means all board members and the general manager are expected to keep these matters confidential.
Correct. You guys are also embody the district.
And I think the one thing that when I'm reading it, just because I happen to be sitting in this role of president, that it indicates that reports can be made either to the general manager, their designee, or the president of the board. But then what happens next, I guess, is the part that I would like to see it spelled out. So if someone made a complaint to the board president that they didn't share with the general manager, for example, does the president go to the general manager, or does the president go directly to legal counsel? Could we have sort of a guidance on that?
Let me take a look at this.
Or maybe that's covered in the complaint form. I'm not sure.
That is a good question. I don't know the answer to that one off the top of my head, but I can add that to my list for clarification if you'd like.
Because it next says the general manager, their designee, or an authorized representative of the district will promptly look into the facts. And to me, that seems very vague. I'm accustomed to an environment where there is a designated authority. In other words, even if I'm a manager and someone comes to me with a complaint, the first rule of business is I do not investigate. There are people who in the organization who are charged with investigating, probably in our case, that would be our legal counsel. But this doesn't really seem to me to sort of draw a line or give proper guidance about who's authorized to forward a complaint, which is really different than investigating it.
Certainly. No, I see there's a gap there also.
But your attorney said that nothing really needed to be changed.
So Kevin, let's be constructive. If you don't mind my saying so, I just think we want to be constructive. And if this needs to come back, maybe we've raised some things. Does anybody else have anything else? Just sort of based on the comments that we've made so far that has come to your mind. So there is a question from the public. Could you give a review of them on something like Yelp for agencies or, oh, maybe that was for RGS. I just noticed. Sorry about that. anyway, I did not take public comment on either of the two items. They're not action items, but let's just briefly see if anyone from the public has anything to offer. And I'm not seeing anything. So I wonder if, Kevin, would you be willing to share your comments on policy 180 with the rest of the board in the same way that we think you're planning to for policy 170?
I will share it with the board and anyone who's a member of the public who is interested, because I think that if the public is going to make intelligent comments, they have to be able to see what the dialogue is about. Am I wrong?
I don't think anyone can stop you. Do I have any, can we move on? Is everyone all right with that? We have one or two more items that involve our legal counsel. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the training requirements, agenda item 4.5, new policy 185, training requirements. So I'm just going to go around in the same way. Don, do you have any comments on the training requirements?
No.
Janice. Thanks, Don. Janice?
No.
Larry?
No comments. This doesn't seem any different from the training requirements that I've seen in numerous prior jobs that I've been in.
Kevin.
Interesting. It seems like then there would be a lot of policies out there that just could have been downloaded. No further comments.
I just have the same comment that I made earlier on, because we're talking about training. I think it is in the context of the behaviors that are dealt with in policy 170, if I'm correct. But it says the training will also cover abusive conduct, workplace bullying, or other types of prohibited harassment. And I just want to reiterate my comment that I think bullying has become a pretty big deal in the workplace, and recognizing bullying and raising people's awareness. So I don't know how bullying fits in. I mean, presumably maybe it'll be covered by the training and then we'll learn, but it would be kind of nice, I feel, to have a little bit of elaboration about what is abusive conduct other than what's already been defined, and workplace bullying.
So for those two, I see them as emerging topics, because bullying certainly is, but as far as whether there's a settled definition as to what that means, so I see it as an emerging something that maybe isn't concrete enough to have in a policy, but it's something we're all educating ourselves about.
I would agree with that comment. All right, let's see, anyone from the public like to make a comment about the training requirements for board members, policy 185? All right. If there are no objections, then I would like to move on to the code of conduct. And Mary, I'm going to put hand this back over to you. Okay. You had some introductory remarks about how we had another code of conduct and then you brought this one back. Maybe just could you frame this for us?
Sure, let me just go back to what I had there. Yes, the district had a code of conduct and it has a code of conduct, and there was a suggested amendment provided in May that I had recognized after I put together some potential red lines that are included here. I didn't mean to overstep that activity. I know that there is actually a committee that worked on that. There's language that I suggested to try to update the policy a bit. There's also some other policies from other districts. A lot of them are really nice, clean sample policies. So there's other information that we could consider incorporating. So this is provided for board feedback and direction as to whether we're ready to make updates or if we want to look at potentially including information from other districts. Or the proposed amendment that occurred back in May.
All right, let's just go through the drill. Don, do you have any questions or comments? So Mary has redlined, kind of updated our existing code of conduct, also to tie it in with the harassment policies and tie it back so there's a linkage. And then there are various samples available from other districts. Do you have any comments right now on what Mary has presented for the new policy 1020.
No, no comments.
All right, Janice?
Janice is muted, she may not.
No.
No comments? Okay, Larry?
The only comment I have here is one having, I think 1020.18 needs to be indented. It's part of the 1020.10 series. It's not its own standalone. It's not a 1020.10. It's not a 1020.20. It's an it's part of 1020.10.
Yes. Got it. You are correct. Thank you. Also, the footer you'll note is incorrect. I'm not sure why that's occurring. We'll get that corrected. We're going to a new format to make it look a little cleaner.
Kevin.
Mary, do I understand that what's on page 86 and 87 is what you revised?
86 and 87. That's the clean version.
And that's what you revised?
Yes. So the red line is following.
Following, yeah. No, I think that's perfect. I don't think we need anything else. I would just, and I would actually move that we accept your version. I would bring up one thing that I think people should consider. Under 1020.17 cohesiveness, all is good except once the board of directors takes action, directors should commit to supporting the action and not creating barriers or speaking against the action. That's pretty good, but I happened to be conversing with an old friend of mine who is one of the top people in the ACLU in the country. And he said that, of course, you have a First Amendment right to speak against an action if you dissented from it, even after it's been voted. I would agree that you don't work to undermine it, but you can certainly say that you don't think it was the best policy to take. That's a First Amendment right, and I would remove that last phrase because I think it abridges First Amendment rights. And there is no obligation whatsoever for directors to have to say that they agree with policies when they don't.
Any other comments, Kevin? Oh, Mary, were you going to say something?
No, that's understood. And I was just going to have Rachel perhaps speak to that point, but that's okay. Finish your director.
Great idea.
First.
Well, I kind of had a similar comment, so I'll make it first. I just have a lot of questions in general, and maybe we can do this at another time, but about what kinds of First Amendment rights does an individual give up by agreeing to run for election and become elected to an elected body? So for example, we've been talking about confidentiality, and does your membership on a body such as a board of directors usurp some of your First Amendment rights? Like if you just decide you wanna go do something that either a board member shouldn't be doing or violates a government code, and this applies to both the board and its standing committees, which are also considered to be legislative bodies. At a certain point, if we're part of a board, a legislative body, even a standing committee, I mean, where do you draw the line between First Amendment rights versus the obligation that you've taken on as a member of a legislative body?
It's actually a really interesting field, and there's many lines that aren't very clear. The overarching principle is that the First Amendment does not apply to government speech. Individuals that are elected officials do have certain First Amendment rights, but they are underneath the other statutes that relate to how elected officials must perform and their duties and their obligations and some things that they can't say. So it really, it just depends. But once you become an elected official, you are sort of put into like a very special category. For example, public officials aren't allowed to sue under taxpayer standing, or they're not allowed to sort of take advantage of rights that are available to the public even there. So you're sort of in this side category. There are some rare instances where courts will find that there are First Amendment rights that have been violated, but usually it goes back to a sort of a deeper obligation or duty that comes with the office that the person chose to take.
Because I want to say that I do really like what Mary did with our code of conduct. And I would actually have no problem with us kind of moving ahead with this. But at the same time, I found many things in the codes of conduct from other districts that for myself, I would feel that even if we adopted this one at the next meeting, I would like to see further work done. There are policies that I thought were very good, and they came from fire districts. And I didn't really have time to make a list of them to share with Mary. I could make a list and share with everybody. But so for example, if an employee or a contractor or a vendor, what have you, has a complaint about the district's policies and complains to a director, one of these fire districts has a policy that the director should immediately inform the general manager rather than try to work it out with the employee or handle it in another manner. And I saw a number of policies that relate to how do board members interact with the employees or contractors who are part of their constituency and that don't really relate to the sexual harassment policy, but really are more about conduct and the role of the board versus the role of staff and those who perform services for the jurisdiction that the board governs. And then there were also some articles that did speak to the freedom of speech. For example, speaking on behalf of the board is a delegated authority, as opposed to any member of the board has a First Amendment right to speak to the press as long as they identify the fact that they're speaking on behalf of themselves only. So these are just some examples of things that I found in these codes of conduct that I thought would be useful to continue to explore. Whether we do it in this next iteration or not, I found that my opinion is that they were useful. Let's see, I saw a hand raised in the public and someone put their hand back down. Do you see a hand anymore, Mary? There was one up and now down.
No, I don't. I see a chat. Let's see.
Oh, Kevin. That's from Kevin.
Oh, okay.
All right. Okay, so it looks like there are no comments from the public on our code of conduct, as I'm able to tell. So Shall we deem this a, Rachel, did you have anything to offer since you're here?
No, I think, you know, codes of conduct are interesting because it's not like they're enforceable the way that, say, an employee policy would be against an employee, but it's kind of a social contract that boards decide together that this is how they're going to conduct themselves. And sometimes it touches on things that are legal responsibilities, and sometimes it's just things about the culture that the board wants to have for itself. So it's, I think they can be helpful, but it's sort of the idea is that everybody's sort of getting on to the idea of it together. That's something they mutually agreed upon.
May I ask a clarifying question?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Rachel, so if I understand, you were saying that there are First Amendment rights up to a point. For example, if there is a board decision and there is a dissent, afterward, the board member who dissented is not prohibited from explaining dissent or even maintaining dissent, but it is restricted. And I think you bring out a very good point. Julie brings this out too, that there are some classes of behavior that by supervening laws and regulations are not possible, even as a matter of First Amendment rights. For example, we agree that closed session proceedings are confidential, period. And that trumps, pardon the phrase, First Amendment rights.
Correct.
Okay, thanks. That's good. Appreciate it.
I think that's also covered to some extent by the criminal code or the guy. I mean, it could be a crime. So First Amendment rights don't cover committing crimes as far as I know.
Right.
All right.
Joey, I have one. I'm a stickler for grammar, and in that cohesiveness paragraph, the last sentence should be directors have no individual authority, not directors has.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. All right, then, unless anyone objects, I'll close the discussion of the first reading of our code of conduct. We'll thank Rachel very much for joining us.
Yes.
And we did agree that we would take a 5-minute break, unless, does anyone not want to take a break? Anyone want to just keep moving?
A little break is fine.
All right, so I'm going to set the timer on my clock for 5 minutes. And everyone take a break and be back in 5 minutes sharp. I sent 4 because remember when Janice presented her, now we're in our 5 minutes, okay? We're like, when Janice did her work, we had asked her if she could share with us the policies that were sent to her by people over the CSDA listserv. So I actually found those 2 policies, and then I found the Moraga Arinda and I think the Groveland on my own because I saw good things in them. So I just asked Mary to include them.
Well, thank you to both of you for doing that.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay.
Mary, you're good on the check policy?
Yes, I got your updates. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So good to see all of you.
Thank you, Rachel.
See you next time.
All right. I had mentioned at the beginning of the meeting that we don't want to keep Chief Pagoni here all night unless he elects to stay here all night. So instead of President and GM going first, Chief Pagoni, would you like to go ahead with your report?
Sure. We're going to wait till everybody's back, or is everybody back?
Hopefully by hearing the voices, that would be the signal. And now Donna's back. I assume Janice is there. I can't tell. Janice, are you back?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Why don't you please go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, and I do appreciate you moving moving this ahead, or moving my thing ahead. In the interest of time, as I'll some of this fairly brief, but run report wise, you have had a chance to look at the runs both within the community and outside the community for the month of July. Pretty much within the community, things I think was off by one call from, I think it was one less than the month before. Outside of the community, calls have picked up. It's primarily just due to the fact that entering fire season, or you know, weather getting warmer, we have been experiencing an increase in vegetation fires, including a few out in the park that we have responded to mutual, or I should say auto aid. None of them all that big, but you know, they have all had potential for that. And the rest, and then some of the additional calls also, just again, with the warmer weather, residents are getting very jittery when they do smell smoke. So we've had a number of smoke calls, or you know, smoke checks as we like to call them. So, but aside from that, like I said, it was, you know, 31 calls within the community, which is you know, pretty much a normal number, and 58 calls outside, which typically anywhere between 55 and 60 calls a month is normally what the engine is responding to. We did, as far as vegetation management is concerned, we continue with inspections. We are checking, you know, some of the ones that were brought to you last month. They are clearing. I have to admit the residents are being very, very helpful, diving into their issues. We have gotten a few complaints. I know the board is aware of some of them. You know, there's a fine line out there with vegetation management. You know, the policy that the board has is dealing with dry vegetation. And a lot of the complaints we get, you know, we have residents that want to classify some things as a fire hazard when the last one that we dealt with, and we did meet with the neighbors, it turns out to be more a taste issue and a view issue. You know, our vegetation management policy, you know, when it comes to the height of dry grass, you know, we limit it to 6 inches. How you get it to 6 inches, you know, we don't regulate that, so long as the grass, you know, if you want to knock it down and pour gravel over it, does it look good? No. Does it meet the standards? Yes, it does meet the standards. You know, so we are out there, not only in Kensington, but in El Cerrito also. Every summer at this time, we fight, I shouldn't say fight, it's not a good word, but we do run into a number of people, you know, that believe trees that block their views are fire hazards. And again, you know, when you have bad taste in landscaping, they want to indicate that that's a fire hazard. And of course, we do have the people that, you know, are upset about, that are upset about the eucalyptus trees, junipers, and the other type of trees out there. You know, no disagreement that, you know, that they're probably not the best type of trees to have around. But again, our vegetation policy does not outlaw them. You know, it is something if the board feels they want to, you know, make a wider or a broader brush in this vegetation policy, it's definitely something that can be discussed. You know, we can always go out and, you know, look at or look at groups that can rewrite the policy and tighten it up. But you know, that's for another night and another discussion as to what that would take to do. But all in all, the vegetation management is looking really good this year. So we're really happy about that part. I guess anything can possibly affect Kensington, but as far as in El Cerrito, we had a rash of some arson fires, of which Engine 65 did participate in, as far as responding for you know, to help with the problem with it. All of them, fortunately, were kept very small. One of them, though, did have a very good potential at the new project up at the Del Norte BART station, where they are putting in the six-story apartment buildings. They lit some portable toilets and a debris box on fire. Thankfully, we were able to get there and get the fire put out before it moved into the construction zone. I'm really trying hard not to put an Emeryville or Oakland style fire onto my resume, you know, but it's, you know, with a lot of more building going on, you know, that is a concern that we have. But thankfully, for the last week and a half, short of a lot of homeless encampment fires along the freeways, you know, it's been, we haven't had a whole lot going on. So that's a good thing for it. One thing we do have coming up, we just got notified that the ISO, the Insurance Services Office, it's time for our rating again. We were last rated, for those that were on the board back then, in 2014, at which time we were able to drop not only the city but the district to a rating of 2. Fairly confident we should be able to stay at 2, but they do make us jump through a lot of hoops. A lot of information filling out, so we will be working on that, getting all the forms, the hydrant flows, and all the records that they require for it. It'll be about a 3 or 4 month project going on with it. Outside of that, as far as the coronavirus, we continue with our diligent use of PPE. We did a couple of Since the last meeting, we did have 3 of our firefighters had a potential exposure. In essence, it was a person tested positive that ended up in cardiac arrest. And anytime we work up a cardiac arrest, it is considered a high-risk procedure, even though we did have proper PPE on. County policy required us to isolate these 3 gentlemen for 14 days along with multiple testing. The good news is that they all tested negative and they are all back at work right now, but it was definitely one of those, you know, things that, you know, makes you step back and reevaluate things with it. Aside from that, I think we already talked about, as far as dealing with the community warning system, I think we already covered the virtual drill that's coming up. And so from that point, I will open things up for questions.
Chief, a couple of years ago, I thought the state was coming up with a stiffer list of flammable planting, you know, materials. Did they do that?
The state is working, CAL FIRE actually, they are working, you know, on lists of trees. You know, there's a difference of what you consider, you know, a tree that basically a higher risk tree versus if that is something you want to put into your policy. Our policy right now, both the city and the districts, you know, does not, you know, tell us that we have to go out and pull out junipers and pull out eucalyptus. Again, if the district wants to, you know, wants to expand and go that direction, we can, you know, but keep in mind that when you start doing that, there's going to be great, you know, that there's going to have to be a whole mitigation process laid out. I mean, you know, if you look around, you know, within the community and you look at how many houses are landscaped with juniper and cypress. I mean, let's not even talk about the eucalyptus, just the, you know, juniper and cypress. You know, we're talking probably, you know, the majority of the homes at some form or another have it. You know, and so to go in and tell people that you've got to remove this, we are talking major costs that they are going to incur with it. Without the means of, you know, having some sort of grant base out there or loans for them to do it, you know, it's going to be one of those things. Is that a project the district wants to take on, and the pushback that's going to come with it? You know, an example of somebody that, or an area that is going that direction would be Marin County. You know, Marin County does have a very tight vegetation policy, but they also passed a parcel tax, I believe last year, that is generating millions of dollars for them to go out, you know, with fuel reduction crews and also to provide loans. You know, it's a multi-faceted program, you know, that the area wanted to do. You know, that it, we do not have that funding in place to allow us to do that.
So I have, I'm not quite done yet. So a cypress tree is what you're talking about, this one that would.
Yeah, the cypress, you know, I think the common one is, I always call them a Roman candle, but the Italians, the tall, you know, they're usually a foot and a half in diameter and they get very tall, you know, let alone the I'm not talking about like a cypress, like a regular, you know, I don't know the exact word for it, but you know, it looks more like a tree as opposed to.
If you watch golf, which I never do, because they have more cypress trees on the coast.
Yeah. I'm talking more the, you know, it looks more like an ever, like a bush.
That's okay. All right. Thank you.
I have two questions, if I may, Mike. One, do we have any of our firefighters out on fires throughout the rest of the state, or have we in the last month?
Yes, actually, thank you for bringing that up. Well, basically, yes, we have two. We have a captain. They both are up north. They are on the what is being called the Red Salmon Fire Complex, or Red Salmon Complex. It is up in the Willow Creek, Happy Camp, which is a oxymoron because it's not very happy. I have spent many days up there in the past few years, but anyway, it's up in the Trinity and Six Rivers National Forest. Very, very steep area. They've had a number of lightning fires up there, and so they group all these fires together. So we have one of our paramedic captains that's up there, what they call spiking out. They, in essence, are out in the wilderness for days on end with the fire crews. They're there to provide medical care in case somebody falls, trips, chainsaw accident, whatever. And then also one of our battalion chiefs is up there with an incident management team as the radio communications unit leader. With it, they left this weekend to go up there. We did, you know, we've had some people that were down south at the Apple Fire, which was in San Bernardino. All of those people are home now. So it's the majority of the fire. I mean, there are a number of fires going in the state. You know, none of them are super large fires. We're not losing homes. You know, it is burning acres up. I will say that there was some reports put out this past week. The predictions for the weather is, you know, as we go into September, October, I kind of like to look at it that what we've been through right now has been, you know, kind of related to a sports game. We've been in the regular season right now. As we enter into September and October, we're kind of in the playoffs. You know, we're getting into the bigger fires, more intense fires, as we head into this, the new weather pattern, as we go into fall, there'll be, you know, the predictions right now are a late rain season, right now, even in our area within the county. Fuel moisture levels are, I mean, here we are just the middle of August. The fuel level, moisture levels are at like October, November levels. Wow. Very, very, very dry. So, and you know, with, well, like the next few days, I'm not sure what the weather prediction, I know that's warmer there. I know up here where I live, you know, we're talking triple digits for probably Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I know it's gonna be warm down there also. They haven't said anything about red flag yet, but that can come up, you know, that can come up very, very quickly for it. So, you know, we're not, you know, it hasn't been a lot happening yet, but again, if you look at all the large fires in the last 3 years, they've all happened in the September, October, November timeframe. You know, people think of summer, you know, the June, July, August is summer, so to speak, and that's fire season. But in reality, fall is a worse time until we get rains. It's going to be, you know, we're expecting a lot to happen. So this year is being very, is making things even more difficult to be able to bring these thousands of people together on the fire lines amid the COVID-19 protocols that are out there. It has changed the way, it's changed the way that they run camps. They're bigger camps, they're spread out in more areas so that there's not as many people. They're doing more box lunches as opposed to, you know, cook to order or buffet style like normally is done. You know, the sleeping quarters, they're doing more, you know, where everybody is spread out in tents as opposed to sleep trailers or hotels. It's posing a major problem. And of course, with problems that come with the cost, you know, so fire suppression this year for the state, again, amid the pandemic and all the expenses for that, they are going to be pushed when it comes to mitigation. But they have committed to spend the money. They're going to throw more resources when something happens, try to stop it, try to keep fires smaller. I know that sounds like a, you know, kind of like a common sense thing. Why don't we always do that? But, you know, that is a move they're doing this year.
And then I have a second question. Thank you for an excellent answer for that. I now understand what's going on. I noticed that there was a comment a week or two ago on Nextdoor that as a result of budget difficulties, El Cerrito's fire services were going to be reduced. Does that affect us at all here in Kensington?
The only thing, well, as far as the reductions go, we are not closing down any stations. We are not browning out any stations. Matter of fact, we're in the process of hiring a paramedic right now to fill an open vacant slot. Where we are looking, as far as the fire department is concerned, where we are looking at making some savings is going to be putting off the purchase of one of our engines that we're going to put off for a year. I don't really want to, but you know, it's an easy place to gain, you know, to save some, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. We potentially have a retirement this year. So we're looking there to be a place that we don't have to backfill it really quick. You know, I mean, we'll be able to pick up the workload. And at that, the retirement won't happen till probably December or January, you know, so it's gonna be well into this budget year. And then, of course, with the COVID-19, we have canceled all of our public education. We are not doing any CPR classes, CERT classes. You know, the Tri-City Safety Fair, you already know we did not do the 4th of July, which is a big, aside from everything else that the city does, is a big a big public education for us. We do with our smoke trailer. Just for the simple fact that, you know, there's not a real way to do any of this and do it effectively and maintain the social distance. Plus, you know, nobody's signing up for them. So, no, you know, I mean, everybody's being very cautious, as they should be, with it. So, you know, those are typically taught with overtime. And so, you know, we're able to save the overtime. We are still working with the CERT volunteers. CERT, you know, as I have always said, is, you know, the fire department supports CERT. We do not run CERT. CERT is a community volunteer basis. We do the training. We give them guidance. We give them support. The district has done things to provide equipment to them. You know, we do anything and everything possible. But it is just like you talked earlier about the La Mirinda CERT group that's doing yet again another water drum sale. And they actually sell a lot of other things, fire extinguishers, the weather radios, smoke detectors, a lot of things that they provide. All run by volunteers, not tied to any organization. You know, again, supported by a number of cities, but they run on their own. You know, so we do continue to support them. You know, we continue just like this drill coming up. You know, we're continuing with the public education on that part. You know, that Cohen's or basically in cooperation with KPD and with the Emergency Preparedness Committee. You know, to work on the evacuation drills and work bugs out, not only between Zone Haven, but also with the county community warning system. So, you know, when they say that, you know, we're dropping services, you know, in my mind, it's some programs that we're dropping. As far as what the district's going to see, as far as what the public is going to see, there will be absolutely no change. City Council has been very, very clear. While they could sit there and aside from what that does with the contract, if they just said, you know, hey, we're going to shut a station down, that would create a lot of problems, you know, across the board. They do not want that. They do recognize the fire danger that's been present for a number of years with climate change. And they, you know, they absolutely, it's not even on the radar for them to consider closing a station or browning a station out. Was it options thrown at them by the consultants? Yes. They looked at a number of different options. From closing a station, you know, laying some people off and closing a station, to turning one of the stations into a medical only unit, to downstaffing to 2-0 staffing instead of 3-0, which is a safety issue. You know, they considered all of those, didn't consider them long, but they, you know, they, all of those were presented to them. And they are very much committed to not doing anything that affects the quick service that the fire department provides, you know, not only for fire, but medical, rescue, you know, everything else that we do.
Thanks so much for your response.
You're welcome.
So folks, it's 9:47. I would like though to just quickly touch Larry, Kevin, myself, whether you have anything for Chief Pagoni, but Mary's got a couple of action items that I think it would really help her if we address them. But Larry, do you have anything for Chief Pagoni?
No, I do not.
Thanks, Larry. Kevin? No. Okay. And I had just, I wanted to ask the question that Janice had asked, and I just want to maybe say, perhaps for your next report, could you give us an update on the emergency operations plan? That I know that's been in progress. I think the latest is 2000. I don't want it to, because we don't have time, but maybe for your next report next month, you could give us an update.
You were breaking up for some reason there. You wanted an update on emergency and the rest of it was garbled. I'm sorry.
Oh, at the next meeting.
Yes.
Can you give us an update on the new emergency operations plan?
Yes.
Thank you. That's all I really had. But so thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. We were going to do Mary's report and my report, but they're both in writing in the packet, which if we end up extending the meeting, we can discuss them. But I'd like to go back to some of Mary's items. And so let's go back to the agenda where we left off. Item 4.7, approved staffing plan to hire administrative support and finance positions. Mary, I'll turn it over to you. But you're muted.
Well, that would help. Okay, thank you very much. I included a staff report talking about the staffing plan for directly hiring part-time administrative support and finance positions, one of each. I estimate 5 to 10 hours a week for those positions, not too terribly much. But what we have right now are the temporary agency services through Robert Half office team for the administrative side. That person actually decided that she's looking for a position with more hours, so she's going to be transitioning out. I've got to find someone new. So they're working on getting a replacement. So that's just the challenge with temporary services. And I'm trying to ensure the district has some continuity here. And with the financial support position, it's just at a higher rate than I believe the district could get if hiring a position in-house. These would be non-benefited positions. And for the most part right now, they'd be remote until that changes, until the situation changes, and until there's some office space potentially. So I have included estimates ranging hourly rates for the admin and for the finance, and come up with a total staffing plan for, I gave two ranges. With a GM working the maybe ultimate goal that maybe the board would like to see of 20 hours, which right now is just not really happening. I'm really pushing those 30 hours, but with the right support, I could see those hours reducing. I haven't really been able to get the administrative support that I think I'd be able to get if I could hire a position directly. So the total between the administrative support, the finance support, and the GM, my estimate in a year with either 20 hours for a GM or 30 hours for a GM are $117,500 or $169,500 with all of those positions combined. So that's the total estimate, and we could include that in the budget, and it's very similar to the costs previously, a little bit of an increase, but we do have some changes that we're making and projects that weren't probably happening in the past. So the hiring process, obviously it's not overnight. It takes some time to accomplish, several months usually. That would entail finalizing position descriptions, job recruitment ads, identifying appropriate websites to place recruitment advertising, screening and interviewing applicants, performing reference checks, making offers, and securing start dates. So I'd be looking to have the staffing plan approved so that I could embark on hiring these positions for the district. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, let me just quickly run through. Don, questions, comments?
I think, no, I'm okay.
Janice? Present.
Muted? Is she muted?
She is like going in and out of being muted, but looks muted now. Now I'm unmuted. Go ahead, Janice.
She's showing muted to me.
I'm seeing it like toggling. Maybe we'll give her a chance. Let's just go to Larry and then we'll come back to Janice.
I just had one question, Mary. Are we replacing the admin position that you had previously, or are we adding another admin position?
Right, so these would actually replace the admin position that I have temporarily filled right now, and then the financial assistance that I have through a contract. Those would be replaced with hiring the positions directly, yes.
So that means the total staff for the district would now be 3 people.
Right, and their hours would be reduced on those positions, but yes, people-wise, that's correct.
Okay, Kevin.
And you're doing that because they're different skill sets? Is that, why are you having 2 5-hour-a-week jobs instead of 1 10-hour-a-week, I guess?
You're right. So different specialties. So an office administrative person would be, you know, getting the mail, responding to emails, phone calls. So kind of the administrative office support, where the finance person would be working on the financial statements and the bills. And they're definitely different skill sets. You usually can't find them combined. It would be wonderful to, but usually you can't find that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Kevin.
Maybe we can hear Janice now, Julie.
All right, Janice, it looks like you're unmuted.
I'd be happy to make a motion to authorize Mary to do the hiring of her 2 assistants as described in her memo of August 12th.
Thanks. I second that motion.
OK, Thank you, Larry. I was only planning to comment that I can fully understand why Mary needs this support. And I can tell you after my experience with RGS, it's really hard to just have new people keep coming and going and have to repeat the training effort. So I'm good with it too. All right, let's see if we have any public comments on the motion to authorize Mary to proceed with her staffing plan. I don't see any. No hands raised. All right, then I vote in favor. Kevin?
Fine. Yes.
Yes. Don?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Sorry, I switched the alphabetical order there. Unintentional. Good work, Mary.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, Mary, do you want to go ahead and tackle your, I think that let's just be conservative here. My computer and my phone are showing 9:56, and my sense is that item 4.8 is important to Mary.
Yes.
Do I have a motion to extend the meeting?
I move we extend the meeting by 15 minutes.
To 10:15? Can we say 10:15?
10:15, yes.
Thanks, Larry. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thanks, Don. All right. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don? Don, your vote?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
All right, 10:15. All right, take it away, Mary.
All right. I have kind of, there's two things included with this item. So I'm looking for proceeding with a proposed amendment to policy 8, the checking account. And then along with it, kind of as a temporary measure, I'm looking for approval of resolution 20-12. So the proposed amendment would include essentially increasing the checking account maximum limit from $35,000, the Mechanics Bank banking account, to $200,000. So that's the policy change I'm looking for. It takes a couple of meetings to get that through. We have received the CERT, California Employee Retirement Benefit Trust reimbursement for $112,000, excuse me. And under current policy, we'd have to send that to the county and then go and request back reimbursements through the replenishment process. It's just administratively not most ideal. It'll take us longer to get the money back. So changing that policy would allow a reimbursement such as that to be able to be deposited. Then if the district can ever get any type of grant funding, et cetera, we'd be able to put that through the account and pay bills much more quickly. So as the temporary measure, and there's actually an amendment, some red lines that Rachel, she was able to get through just at the last minute on the changes that she would recommend for this. So I think I'm going to go ahead and figure out how to share my screen. She just added some wording on the clause that I think would be helpful. Let me just get to it. I can actually get to it.
Okay. Is it just one clause that she changed?
I'll just read it. So she just changed a little bit of, you know, the placement of meeting and board of directors, et cetera, in one of them. But the clause that she added or actually increased my wording was, in light of the extenuating circumstances caused by the pandemic and the procedural constraints for amending policy 8, the board of directors desires to authorize the interim general manager to maintain a higher balance in the district checking account for the purpose of depositing the CERP funds and the administration of district financial matters during the pandemic. And then the now therefore be resolved, she updated a little bit to say that the Kensington Fire Protection Board of Directors authorizes the interim general manager or general manager, if applicable, to maintain a balance in the district checking account not to exceed $150,000 effective upon adoption of the resolution up to and including October 31st, 2020, unless amended, altered by another policy amendment or other action of the board of directors. So those were her updates to that. So I mean,
that's to the resolution?
Yes, the resolution.
Okay, all right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes, thank you for the clarification. So I'd be looking for approval of those items, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay, let's just quickly one at a time. Don, questions, comments?
No, I understand it. So right. Yes, I'm clear.
Okay, Janice.
I have several questions. I want to know what the return on interest is in the LAIF account and what the return on Mechanics Bank would be on a checking account of that magnitude. So I know how much money the district would be losing by having the money at Mechanics rather than with the county.
Certainly. So the LAIF account, I'd have to look that up. I know the Mechanics Bank would be fairly low. What we can do at the Mechanics Bank is they'll often offset services, so they won't charge you service fees. But I'm trying to go to the LAIF monthly performance rates. So the LAIF rate right now is at 1.08%. So that would be an amount. And it would not really be the intention to try to keep the balance at 200,000. It would be that if that deposit comes in largely from the SERPT, that we'd have that amount, that capacity available. But for the most part, I would say it would be just the monthly bills that we could pay outside of the El Cerrito contract. That's just too high. So that would be the offset. It's a 1% interest rate, and we try to offset it. They will offer interest. I don't know that it would be very high, but it would be trying to negotiate some other services to receive.
Because at $200,000, that would be a little better than $2,000 a year if we were to maintain a balance at Mechanics of $200,000 rather than with LAIF.
Right.
It would cost us $2,000 a year to do that.
Right.
Which is a big convenience fee. Yeah.
Yeah. So we wouldn't want to maintain that. It's just to allow when that payment comes in to deposit it. But we'll be, you know, turning that money through the account and requesting it out of LAIF just when we need it from the county.
Are you good, Janice? Can I move to Larry?
I'm bothered by that amount of money. Yeah.
No problem. Thanks for your questions. That was a great question. Larry, questions?
No questions. I know for a fact that a savings account at Mechanics Bank gives you 0.15% interest.
Thanks, Larry. Kevin, do you have questions or comments?
No, I don't.
Okay, thanks. Mary, I just have a couple of questions. It does look like we've got both the first reading and a potential action item here. I was initially confused when I saw this because the amounts are different. So yes. Let's all keep that in mind that we have a temporary measure to authorize essentially what's kind of occurred.
Right.
My first question is, I was just kind of doing a back of the envelope calculation related to the amount of the SERP reimbursement that you mentioned, $112,000.
Right.
And $644. And it seems like that's, I'm just curious how many months of reimbursement, because I noticed that we were paying approximately like $8,000 a month. It looks like it's around 14 months of reimbursements.
No, it's actually 12. And what it is also, so it includes the CalPERS health and settlement, and then it also includes VSP, Vision Service Plan, and Delta Dental. And so Delta Dental itself is nearly $1,000 a month. It's 900 and something, and VSP is 300 and something per month. So it's all three of those combined.
And how many months is it? Do you
12 have? Months. Yeah, it's 12 months.
12.
Yeah, we requested each year. At the end of the fiscal year, they require you to request it. You can request it sooner, but we have been requesting it evidently at the end of the year. We can change that practice.
Okay, thanks. And my second question is, it is a large amount of money, but I understand why you need the resolution, even if we want to talk a little bit longer about the actual long-term policy.
Right.
But my question is, how are we actually doing all the banking resolutions and getting our who's authorized to do what, getting that squared away? How is that?
So I have all the paperwork together, and I was actually going to take it to my local branch, but they're closed. So I have submitted the question through account as to whether they would like me to mail it, or I can just drive it to Kensington or another branch, but I wanted to actually ask them. So I'm just waiting for their response, but it's all together. So it should be pretty quick once they direct me as to whether they'd like it mailed or actually delivered.
I mean, because that was my only concern with this large amount of money, is that we still have a former employee who's authorized to access the bank account. And it's not that I have any concerns about that individual.
Right.
Or that we're kind of putting that individual in a difficult, like a little bit of a precarious situation.
Right. So, I have access to the account online, and there's no user access for anyone else other than myself and the board president. And I have regular alerts coming from that account as to what's going through, and I also verify it. But yes. Once we get that corrected, it'll be off. But yes, it's in progress.
Okay. Thanks for the update. Janice, are you having another? It looks like you might have another question because your box is getting highlighted.
Nope.
All right. So we have two different things going on here. And first is that I would like to see if anyone would like to make a motion to adopt Resolution 2012, authorizing the temporary increase of the checking account limit to $150,000. And just to be clear, this is through October 31, is that right?
Yes, okay. Correct.
All right, well, do I have such a motion?
This is a resolution?
This is a resolution, but I think we make a motion to adopt the resolution.
Yeah, so these are separate.
Make a motion that we adopt a resolution
2012.
Yeah, 20, thank you, 2012.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, let me go to the public. Is there any public comment on this pending action by the board? We have 8 people still on the line. Thank you for hanging in with us.
I don't see any hands.
I don't either. So I'm gonna call for the vote. So I am in favor of adopting the resolution. Kevin?
In favor.
Let's see, Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
All right, Mary. Let's see, we have 7 minutes left. I might suggest, Mary, since you've got a little breathing room, can we look at the policy issue again?
Yes. No problem. That's fine.
Okay, excellent. Okay, folks, so just looking at the agenda, we've got 4.9, the public safety building renovation update and decision process. We have an item to authorize the general manager to negotiate a lease for office space. And then we have Mary's report, my report, and some board reports. So I guess the way I see it is we might want to consider motions to postpone some of those agenda items so that we can either finish the meeting by 10:15 or extend it, but I can't see covering them in what is now, 6 minutes?
I would take 4.9 public safety building and push it back because there's things there to talk about.
All right, so would you like to make a motion to postpone that, Don?
I make a motion to postpone that.
Do I have a second?
I second the motion.
As far as discussion, I just want to say that I was disappointed that there's nothing on the KPP-CSD agenda tomorrow night about the public safety building, not even a general manager report. So even if we spend a lot of time on this tonight, they're not even talking about it. So I support Don's motion.
Could I make a comment, please, before we vote on that? It's not just that it's not on the agenda. There is nothing in their budget and there is nothing in their reserves that indicate that they can make any meaningful contribution to the renovation cost. And so I would propose that while we wait for next month, we ask Mary to ask the Community Services District to come up with the funding proposal that they will present to us in time for our next month's meeting. Well, you know, their delay so far has cost us almost $1 million in construction costs, and I see no reason to believe they will not continue to delay when they don't have any money.
We just, Janice, 7 years, 7 months the first part of the year, and now we're 2 or 3 months this summer, and so they're really good at that.
So folks, Janice, I take your point wholeheartedly, but our board has already authorized Mary to come up with a finance sharing plan, I think back in June. So I'm not sure that we need to reauthorize her, but hope that she's going to move on it with Godspeed.
Well, I hope we communicate to them that next month's meeting is a drop dead date on how they're coming up with the money.
I think that's a great.
We should have done that. We should have done that in July, and we didn't do it. So
I agree.
We brought it up.
I'd like to see the building committee and potentially the finance committee being, you know, there's lots of legs on the ground on the board on this that can give a lot of advice. And so anyway, Kevin, comment from you?
I don't have a comment on this, Julie.
Okay, public comment. We've got 3 minutes unless we extend the meeting. Any public comment on the motion to postpone this item?
I don't see any.
I don't see any either. So I will call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
In favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, folks. There is one remaining action item. Can we handle it in 3 minutes? Which is authorizing the interim general manager to negotiate a lease for office space. Do I have a motion to postpone?
Make the motion.
I'll move to postpone.
Do I have a second? Okay, Janice and Larry.
It's breaking up. Say that all again.
Janice. I'll move that we postpone discussion of leasing temporary office space.
And I second it.
So, you know, I think the alternative to voting on this motion is to extend the meeting. So I move around. Don, discussion on the motion to postpone?
I move.
I mean, you're okay. No comment. I mean, about postponing. Kevin?
I think if we postpone the last item, we can't consider this one.
I think they're unrelated.
They're not related.
Hiring staff, and we have no place.
Yeah, they're not related.
So, but that's fine. I appreciate your comment. So we have a motion to postpone 4.10 with 2 minutes left. Public comment, raise your hand now if you have any. I'm not seeing any. Okay, so I'll call the vote on that motion to postpone 4.10. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
I make a motion to extend the meeting until 10:30.
I'm not going to go with you.
Nor will I.
All right, let's see. How about anybody else? Do I have a second to Larry's motion? Well, I second Larry's motion, so we can vote on it. I'm willing to stay, but I understand if others don't want to. So discussion on Larry's motion. Okay, I'll call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
I vote against it because I'm not sure what we'd be extending it for.
Yeah, it's...
Okay, that's okay. Everybody vote how you want. Don?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, what's your vote on extending?
My vote is no.
Okay, that, well, I just need to make it official. Janice?
No.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, well, we had 2 in favor and 3 opposed. So it's 10:15, and the reports will have to come, they're in writing. They'll come back to us later for discussion.
Okay.
All right, I think we're finished. Thank you, everyone. Are you going to say something, Mary?
No, that I'm. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, all right. Okay, thanks, everybody. Thanks,
good night, all.
Good night.